This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to Postcards from the Edge. I'm your host, Amy Nelson, and with me this week is Chris Tribuzio. Chris, thank you for coming on Postcards.
Thank you very much for having me, Amy.
Well, this is your first time you've been on the show, so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and share with us your Trek story?
Well, I'm here in Las Vegas. I have a Trek story. So I got into it later on in my life, somewhere around like the late 20s, early 30s. Reason why is because really, Trek wasn't really for me at the time, and I'm glad I got back into it into my later years, because one of the series, Deep Space Nine, which celebrates its 25th anniversary this year, has a lot of topics, both political and religious, that still resonate today, 25 years later. It's one of those things that you could always go back to, because it's still stuff that resonates today.
Very good. And when did you find Trek FM?
God, I don't remember. I know I listened to it many years ago. And I listened to it and I just said, hey, you know, Star Trek's a gig. Let's see about this new podcast thing. See who's podcasting. And there were several out there. And I found Trek FM, and I've been hooked ever since. And most recently, with the advent of Discovery, I found this little podcast known as The Edge.
Right.
And Postcards from the Edge. So once I started listening to that, it was great. I also listened to Warp 5. I listened to all the channels, really. But Discovery specific, I found yours, and what a great show you have. You and Patrick, and when Bichet was on, it was great. And you guys continue to do a great job. And this Postcards thing is absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's just wonderful to have you. I met you, surprisingly enough, at STLV. And yep, a local. So it's good to have another local Trek fan here. So.
Yeah, it is. It's great. I remember we first met at a local bar here in town where they were celebrating your favorite show. They were actually celebrating the Star Trek teardown of the Star Trek Experience. Insert Kleenex. But we first met there, and since then we've been friends, and we met at STLV, and rest is history.
All right. Well, today we are going to discuss the fan response to the short Trek's Calypso. Now, if you would like to participate and share your response, please post your comments on the Babel Conference. That's our listeners group on Facebook. You can type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field and it will come right up. So, Chris, you've watched Calypso, I'm sure, a couple of times. So what were your initial thoughts? What was your gut reaction after seeing Calypso?
Well, I don't know about you, but I didn't have any Kleenex handy, so I just used the sleeve. It was very heartwarming. It was very unique to Star Trek. I don't know for sure if there has been any Greek mythology in Star Trek in the original series. Nothing comes to mind. I'm sure after this podcast, I can think of like three episodes where I'll research it. So, but I think it was very unique in a way that it wasn't so Star Trek. Mm-hmm. There was no exploration per se. It was an exploration of feelings. There was no exploration of space, but it was more or less an exploration of feelings. And I think that's part of what Star Trek is. Outside of political and whatnot, it's an exploration of humanity itself, which still keeps within the Roddenberry vision.
Right, right. It was so interesting reading all the comments. There was a lot of comparisons and other media that came up. I was so impressed with the list that the listeners had. That's like, oh, it's to me like this and this. And so I put together just some of the shout outs that other film and stories got. So one person compared it to the original series Metamorphosis. Another was La La Land, WALL-E, Moon, Mute, Raymond Carver's Slice of Life short stories, Red Dwarf. I mean, those were just some that were mentioned. I thought, oh my gosh, I don't remember having an episode bring to recall so many different types of film and short stories like Calypso did on this one.
And you mentioned that, and it's so true. I never personally have seen La La Land, but seeing the dance scene, I could see the La La Land reference. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was commenting because I was like, man, there's so much. I definitely got the WALL-E vibe. I'm not familiar with Raymond Carver's Slice of Life short stories, but I do remember watching Moon after my brother reminded me. I posted that on Facebook. It's like, I have seen it. But I did watch Mute last night trying to see what the comparisons were. And so it was interesting to have so many references to other stories and film like that. So I thought that was unique that Calypso brought that out.
And that's true. And like we talked about earlier, I was all set on watching Dead Stop, the Enterprise episode, and 2001 A Space Odyssey because of the way the trailer led mm-hmm. out. There was nothing about anything in the episode. It was just Alvis Hodge looking up in the sky and you hear a voice. So right then and there, I thought, okay, it's going to be a suspense. So,
well, let's get to what the fans had to say. And let's start off with Justin Ozer. And he says, Calypso bowled me over. It was moving, beautiful, majestic, inspiring, incredible. Just so good and so captivating. Aldous Hodge gave an amazing performance. Wow. And I agree, Justin.
I totally agree. I've liked Aldous Hodge since his series Leverage. Mm-hmm. And a little side note. Are you a fan of Leverage?
I haven't seen it, no.
You haven't seen it. Well, I don't want to spoil
it.
I'll go for it anyway. There is a little TNG in Leverage where Aldous Hodge plays this computer hacker all through the series. And little Wesley Crusher in one of the seasons of the series plays the bad guy and plays the opposite of Aldous Hodge. So there's a little bit of Trek reference in that.
Nice, little crossover.
Well. Yeah.
All right.
Serena Rodriguez writes, this is some well-done Ghost in the Machine Minuet Sentient Alexa stuff. I have an Alexa, and after watching this thing, I am very careful what I say. Even though I get emails to say, this is what Alexa does now. No, I will never ask those questions. No, I am so afraid. I walk around my room and it's not that big, but still, I still look around the walls to see it. It's evolved. Yes.
Jim McMahon says, I thought it was interesting. It was definitely not what I was expecting. The actors, I thought, did a good job with the acting. I agree. It was unique. I wasn't expecting it just came out of nowhere. I was surprised.
You know, and shout out to the writer, Michael Chabon, and the director itself. What a way to take an old story like The Odyssey and put it into a futuristic story such as Calypso. Very well done. Cinematography, the acting, the comparison between the two. It was very well done. Chris Chaplin writes, "It was a beautiful telling of a common sci-fi story. It became specifically Star Trek when Kraft said that the computer helped him reclaim his humanity. The thousand-year setting detail demands explanation and saddens me that humanity is still warring. Although it seems to be reasonable view of humanity, it is not Star Trek's view. Despite that nitpick, I love the show. I love the slow development of the relationship culminating in the dance. Great little short story. Final thought. This seems like a short story where we peek into a life briefly and then look away just as quickly. We get that flavor of a story, some sweet moments, and an indefinite resolution. If you're into literary short fiction, this works for you. This storytelling makes sense based on the writer of the episode. And there's a whole little thread about loving literary short stories, which we touched on when we looked into the different comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Chris, thank you very much. I thought it was a lovely, slow development. And you're right. It's just there's some sweet moments in there, and we're looking in and then we look away. This great comment.
I agree.
So Chris Littlefield, Chris, he said, he told me, he's like, "Oh, I didn't like it." And I'm like, "What? I loved it." And so he's like, "Okay, just rewatched it. And I really, really loved it the second time." Yes, we know your first response. "I thought it was beautiful, imaginative, creative, and really out of the box for Trek episode. I think I was a little hard on it the first time I saw it because it was so different and brought us to a very unknown place where even the Discovery computer was not as we know her. I was also exhausted and it was super late. I love the new disco t-shirt design, and the fact that we got a hollow dance sequence to Gershwin's Wonderful was just, well, wonderful. Gershwin is one of my favorite composers. The final dialogue as Kraft was departing felt a little clunky, but I love that they both helped each other grow and move on in the end. Annabelle Wallace was really quite lovely as Zora, the self-evolved disco computer. And have I mentioned how hot Aldous Hodge is? Calypso will forever be Star Trek La La Land to me, and I'm totally happy with that." Well, Chris, thank you for your comment. I'm glad that you did rewatch it, not as exhausted, and that you came around to your opinion as where you have it now. And I agree with you. Aldous Hodge is hot. We'll just leave it there. You're right. Gershwin's Wonderful. You're right. La La Land. It was very nice.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Chris Littlefield here. It's really a sweet story, and two people helping each other find what they want. And in the end, it's kind of like the old adage, if you love them, let them go. And they love you, they'll come back. So this was a send-off. She finally knew what he was wanting, and he was really wanting that family that he missed, out on 10 years of the child's life, who was at that point 11 years old because he was in a warring country or a warring state. And she gave him what she really wanted. She gave him everything at first, but realized what he really wanted and sent him on his way. So Brian Louie writes, "It wasn't different from what I thought the story would be. It was expecting something more along the lines of maybe the Discovery being haunted, but it was a nice surprise to find the sweetness in the story. I love the dance sequence. I'm not sure if it was, if I was the only one thinking of Pixar's Wall-E when he was watching the film and then doing the dance. I'm curious to see if we come back to this time period to find out exactly what happened to the crew and why Discovery is staying in this one location. Also, can we just call her Alexa? I just keep thinking of the Amazon Echo. Yeah, I totally agree. Like I said before, those of us that have Alexa are always wondering what's going on. Big brother, big sister watching, however you want to put it. Coming back to this, this brings up a good point. Each of these short treks is what we're hoping are going to be tie-ins in season two or maybe even future seasons should they sign on, because we are hoping for 7 seasons as most Star Treks are. And it'd be interesting to see the very last episode of the very last season, we see the Discovery crew hand off and they go down to the planet, never to be seen again, fade to black, and they would jump right into Calypso.
Interesting. Yes.
They say it's like a 1,000 years. You know, so is it our disco crew? Is it a future disco crew? Because ships can be brought out of mothballs. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, Nicholas Anastasiou says, it's almost hard to find the words to describe just how good Calypso is. I was reminded of Metamorphosis, one of my TOS episodes, one of my favorite TOS episodes. In less than 20 minutes, we were given it all. Romance, poetry, reflection, science fiction, all on standing sets, beautifully lit, shot and acted without firing a single phaser. Here is a piece of Trek that belongs in the pantheon with the city on the edge of forever, The Inner Light, and The Visitor, my new favorite disco episode, and quite possibly in my top 10 or even top 5 all-time Trek episode favorites. Gene Roddenberry is sadly often maligned or made fun of these days for his desire to tell stories about an intellectually enlightened humanity exploring the wonders of the universe and the soul. Seeing what's out there is often connected to what's inside. Yes, sometimes it's hard to write an interesting hour of TV without the usual tropes of kiss, kiss, bang, bang. But every home run is worth 10 duds, because when you do capture that one idea, that special moment, you create something far better than entertainment. You create art and you inspire. Metamorphosis was all about big sci-fi connecting with basic human experience. It was pure, undistilled essence of Trek, and so is Calypso. Thank you, Nick. As usual, your words are very wonderful and easy to listen to and understand. I just love reading your work. But yeah, I agree. I was entranced with this episode. I was pulled to it. It was this romance and poetry and a reflection on humanity. Just exactly to me what Star Trek is without firing a single phaser.
I couldn't agree more with this. I looked at it and this is exactly what I've been saying about Roddenberry, how he posed this idea of all humanity coming together for one purpose and nobody bought it except for Lucille Ball and Desilu Productions. It's like we talked about before, it's humanity. It's something that Roddenberry's vision projects, and 53 years later, people still, when they do Star Trek, or those that believe in it, still believe in it to this day, and here we are. Former co-host of the of Postcards, Wes Huntington writes, highly unusual episode compared to Runaway. Whereas Runaway played like a comedy, this one is heavy on the dramatic. I like Zora. I really thought she would have tried to keep Kraft and try to kill him too, to keep him on the ancient starship Discovery. Well, sure looks like we know why Discovery doesn't appear in any of the Federation history banks. It disappears and is never heard from again. Hopefully that won't happen for a while. Season 7. We're just getting started with this crew. The tattoo on Kraft's back bears a striking resemblance to the angel figures we see in Season 2. Good point. Until we know more about what the Red Angel is, I can't really say to his point it would actually tie in. But that goes to each of these short treks. Are they going to tie into a season or this season? We'll just have to wait to find out. And it's such a long wait.
Oh, I know. We have seen movies where AI ends up being a bad thing. And, you know, I was sort of wondering, yeah, is she going to keep him there? Is she not going to break her programming? Is she not going to send Kraft away? Is she going to, yeah, kill him? So it was an interesting twist that I wasn't expecting. So I liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. Like I said, it was such a twist than what I was originally expecting.
Daniel Stannard says, this is the second short trek so far that has simply made me smile. Calypso was wonderfully understated and a complete joy to watch. It gave me a lot to think about regarding the nature of love, loneliness, and companionship. It was such a delight to see the AI sacrifice its own feelings and well-being and not go down the ever-predictable psychotic machine route and deny Kraft his freedom. If you love something, set it free. Well done, Star Trek. And you talked about that, Chris, too.
Yeah, I did. He's got, again, another one that hits it on the head when it comes to what we're thinking. And a lot of these comments, really, there's nothing to add because we've thought about it. So our good friend, B. Shay, Brandon Shay Mutala writes, I thought it was fantastic. I can't add much to what was already been said, but this is a very creative story and I would love to see a lot more like this. The creativity and originality made it a great short for me. I've only seen it once, but had the vibes of Moon and other classic sci-fi to me. I have not seen Moon, so Amy, I'm going to let you compare the two.
Yeah. So I do remember seeing Moon. And definitely creative and very original, I think, for Star Trek to just see something like this. So beautiful. And I feel sad saying that because I think Star Trek has a lot of beautiful moments. But this one was so beautiful and just so emotional. Like it pulled on different strings in Star Trek that is still Star Trek, but just pulled on these different strings to make this beautiful music of an episode is what I feel.
And I agree. And, you know, again, like you said, it just pulled on so many different heartstrings and the creativity. It all goes back to the director. It falls back to what the director envisions and how everybody comes together to produce what the director wants, including the actor. So we can't leave out Alvis Hodge. And it all comes together, and this is what we get. It's a beautiful, free-flowing, pulling the heartstrings. Like I said, I use my sleeve, not Kleenex. It was one of those things.
Chris Hill says, I thought it was cute. My girlfriend thought it was kind of cute, kind of creepy. I submit it's further evidence of the Dobler-Dolmer theory, which is, if there is mutual attraction, it's cute like Dobler in Say Anything. If there isn't, it's serial killer creepy like Dolmer. So I thought that was quite an interesting comparison there.
Yeah, Say Anything. I just think Kraft with the big boombox machine standing outside somewhere in sick bay, or maybe even in the mess hall. Again, another scene with the mess hall, right? So I just picture that. And to be honest, okay, so going off of this comment, I was thinking about this. I put this in my notes. Okay, so we had the mess hall scene where we see him doing different things, different days. I purposely slowed down that scene and I played Eric Carmen's All By Myself.
Aww.
And it was so funny. Because I thought to myself, what would I be doing? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? What would I be playing? That song would be going through my head as I'd be walking around the corridors, taking the jog, going in, getting something to eat. That would be the only song playing in my head. And this is what it reminds me of.
Nice.
Stephen Dryley Collins writes, I enjoyed the fact that the character involved was Discovery itself or herself, underscoring the importance of setting in any Star Trek show. Discovery, as it turns out, is as loyal as any other member of Starfleet we're likely to meet. And it's true, because we always focus on the characters, but there's also the character of the ship. The Enterprise in TNG, the Enterprise in TOS, Station itself in DS9, and the culture that it brings. The Voyager, the science ship, the Enterprise, the first ship, the NX-01, the first ship to launch into deep space, and its character. And with the Enterprise, NX-01 specifically, it's reminded of a submarine. Clunky, switches, and then it moves, and then the evolution of the ship moves forward. So the ship has a character in itself. In DS9, with the exception because the ship came later, that wasn't the main focus. It was the station of the ship. And like I said, the mingling of different species, it's kind of like going through a bazaar or a farmer's market or a mall, where you see different people coming in, or maybe even Las Vegas for that fact, because we're locals and we're the melting pot of the country, travel and tourism. So many different cultures coming in, so much to be absorbed and taken in by the ambiance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a couple of comments in personal back and forth that I've had, and they're like, well, I thought it was, we were going to get a, you know, more character, and there was nothing. There were no characters. And I'm like, excuse me, Discovery, those starships have always been a character. Like, I love my Enterprise D and E. And to me, the ship is just as much a character. And so I thought seeing this evolution of, this loyal member of Starfleet that Discovery is, and evolution, I think, is great. So I agree with you, Stephen. Andrea Boot says, my initial thoughts about this episode are positive. Reading the synopsis for the episode, this episode sounded like something from my worst nightmares. Waking up in sickbay alone on a ship with just an AI and my own thoughts for company is a recipe for disaster. Instead, this went in a completely different direction with a beautifully bittersweet story about love. Having watched it again since my early morning watch and being slightly more awake this time, I felt the story was really well written and directed. And I agree with you completely. The acting and the directing and the scenes, the cinematography of it all just really went into this bittersweet story about love and humanity. It's wonderful.
This, and I talked to you off mic about this in a message, this comment right here got me. This was, amongst the other positive ones, this one encapsulated, or much like the positive ones, this one also encapsulated what both of what we thought. So I really like this comment a lot. And like I said before, you know, being alone on a ship, you're left to your own devices.
What do you do?
Have fun. Yeah. Dance like nobody's watching. That's all I can tell you.
Well, there were a couple of fun little tidbits that I thought I would just throw in. Why don't you start us off, Chris, with Patrick?
Sure. My friend Patrick Holland says, I thought it was kind of funny that he's doing a lot of things we've been doing if we had a Starfleet ship to ourselves. Like lounging in the captain's chair with popcorn watching movies. Chuckled when he was eating popcorn out of a popcorn box with the Starfleet and Discovery insignia on it. I laughed at this one because, again, you're on a ship by yourself. Who doesn't want to go to the bridge and sit in the captain's chair and pretend to say engage? TNG Earl Grey reference. Who doesn't want to sit in the captain's chair and pretend to give orders?
Right? Yep. I know. I just laughed. I thought that was so right. I'm like, yep, you would be seeing me there on the captain's chair for sure.
And don't think StarTrek.com will not come out with a popcorn box that has the Starfleet Discovery insignia on it for us to buy for $25. Right.
Christopher Littlefield said, crazy thought here. What if through these short treks, the Discovery creative team is dropping little breadcrumbs that point us toward the future of Disco? Little pieces of fabric on a large quilt upon whose strings they can later tug. So it goes back to what you were saying, Chris, like these short treks, yeah, they might be used in the future and in the long game of Discovery.
Again, you're right. It's just like I said, we just don't know when.
Mm-hmm. Well, here on Postcards, we aren't all about reading the positives. We do have some questions and concerns. So Morgan Whitfield says, I'm so curious about the backstory for the Discovery ship, how it got there and what has happened to create Zor, and which captain gave the order to wait there. The episode itself was a great takeoff on the Odyssey, even with a play on the word shuttle for those in the know. So Morgan, I'm not in the know. I do not know much about Odyssey. But yeah, I really am curious to know which captain gave the order to, you know, stay in orbit, stay here, stay put, and then never to return.
I agree. I'm kind of with you on this, is who is what. And the question is, and I don't know if I think we may get to this down towards the end here, but it says it evolved. Okay. Zora says I evolved over 1,000 years. My question is, maybe it was taken over. Maybe they had to abandon ship for some reason and some unknown entity took the ship over and put this technology to boost the computer to become sentient. That's my question, and that's something that would be actually interesting to see as well. Our good friend Greg Malumbi writes, this felt so disconnected from the rest of the Discovery story, I was bored. Probably a story not for me. Although Greg did go back to add more to his thoughts after watching again, but a good first response. I kind of like this comment too, because in the current climate of where we're at right now, especially with the week that we've had here in the States with the California massacre, the California fires, election day, and all this other stuff, sometimes shows don't resonate to a person the way it should. So maybe I want to watch an episode. I'm not really liking it, but I'll go back to revisit it. And my feelings may change because events have changed. And I think with this episode here, with everything that we had going on, this brought a very big light and a smile to everybody's face. Again, the tragedies in California, my heart goes out to them. And there's nothing I cannot even fathom. But hearing the story itself and watching this episode made me smile as if there was a future that we can have, that this romance and humanity comes together and we can finally solve the world's issues.
Yeah, Tim Cooper says, as it currently stands, this didn't resonate with me. In fact, watching it felt like a waste of time. I hope they tie it into some future episode and change my mind. I hate to think this was without purpose. And I think, you know, you do bring up a good point. Like, what is the purpose of this? What, you know, because we last short trek, it was definitely a Tilly story. We got to know her backstory a little bit more. And, you know, so I can see like, this really doesn't have any tie-ins, I mean, outside of the ship herself, but I do hope that we get to see a little bit more that there is a long game being played here with the Discovery writers.
And I also think it's because it's a character that we don't know anything about. With these short treks that we have going on, we know about Tilly. We know about Saru. We know about Mud. And this is something that I think most of the fans were looking forward to because we were hoping for a story that involves somebody we don't know but we can learn more about, which we did in 15 minutes. We would love to see a 45-minute episode and delve deep into the character Kraft and maybe even the character Zora. But I think this is where, and I can agree with him in this fact, because we don't know enough about this guy, but we didn't learn enough about him in 15 minutes to actually base a judgment on. Jesse Okendo says, I agree. I had no idea where it started and where it was going. I felt like someone handed me 15 minutes of a 3-hour movie with no reference. Don't get me wrong, well performed. I just didn't get invested.
I can see that.
I can see that. It's for some people. It's for not. You know, it's not for anybody. But again, you know, take it as it may. Like you says, we explore both sides of it.
Yeah. And like, you know, it was mentioned, it's like you look there and then you look away. And that's all we get, you know, just...
Blink and you miss it.
Exactly. Nicholas Paul Collinson says, and he's out of the U.S., has finally managed to watch it. We won't ask how, no questions. Flipped horizontally, so it didn't trip any heat matching algorithms at 480p, but it was still good. Interesting story, but I was waiting for some explanation of why it was set in Discovery or how the computer became sentient. It was a bit weird, and I think I was expecting more or something different. I feel like the setting of 1,000 years in the future didn't mean anything. I can see your point. Mark Rodriguez and I were going back and forth, and he brought up sort of this 1,000 years. Like, a computer is not going to round a number to 1,000 years. So was it really exactly 1,000 years? I mean, when we see Data and Picard asks him, well, how long until something? And he's like, you know, 4 hours, 20 minutes, 19 seconds, you know, I mean, just down to the exact nanosecond. And then, but Data learned over time, okay, they don't need that exact, but still, like in later seasons, Data was still giving very exact, at least down to the minute. You know, so when the computer says 1,000 years, like that is a little questionable, because I'm like, a computer's not going to round, even if, you know, the computer knows they don't need down to the exact nanosecond. So 1,000 years does seem like a very convenient rounded number, which if I think about it too hard, a computer would not do.
True. I could see that. A computer does not do that at all. But it evolved. So the question is, how did it evolve? It grabbed bits of pieces of human nature to round off the years. It could also be just a writer saying, I would like to write 999 years, 0.9999 and 52 hours and 47 minutes. Trek reference. But all the same, I believe because the mention of the word evolution, had it become some sort of human characteristic of rounding off to the number. Your buddy Mark Rodriguez writes, well, I enjoyed the acting and the visuals, but I'm not sure what the short story really adds to the Star Trek universe. We don't really learn anything about the Federation or the situation that Kraft was involved in. We don't learn anything about the crew or the ship. As to what happens, the material has already been covered by Measure of a Man in several Voyager episodes regarding the Doctor. So while it was pretty to look into, I'm sorry, while it was pretty to look at and the acting was good, I felt that it didn't add anything to our Star Trek universe. I welcome any responses to help me see more. we've talked about this ad nauseum, the acting, the visuals. It's one of those things that, yeah, I can see his point as well. Beaten to the drum, bonk, bonk on the head, however you want to put it. But when was the last time we seen Measure of a Man or a topic such as Measure of a Man? When is the last time we've seen Voyager episodes that deal with coming to humanity? We're looking at 25 years, 30, 40, 36 years now, or 32 years for TNG. You know, it's something to bring back to today's time and for us to think about, for us to not forget Measure of a Man, to not forget the rights of a sentient being like the Doctor on Voyager. Mm-hmm.
So those were the comments. There were quite a few responses and replies. So I encourage you listeners to go back on the Babel Conference and read through those. It's really great discussion. And thank you all for participating. So, Chris, how do you think overall that the fans responded to this Calypso episode?
Well, to borrow a phrase from our friend Ensign Sylvia Tilly, the power of math tells me that it's going to be, and let me get computer-ish on this, 98.959234 to the fourth power positive.
Okay.
The reason why I say this is because, again, we did have a couple comments that say I didn't like it the first time, I liked it the second time, so I added that into the equation as well. But before we end this, there's a scene at the end where Zora puts Kraft on a ship. And at the back of the ship, at the rear of the ship, it says funny face. So, Amy, let me ask you this, and I'll put you on the spot. If you had a ship to name your own, what would it be? I have an answer for you, but I want to hear your answer.
Oh, my gosh. I do not know. I can't even think. You are putting me on the spot. And with all your math making me look bad here. This is the last time you're on postcards.
I'll be sure to get the $20 out of the mailbox there.
No, I don't know. I don't know. What ship would you, how would you name your ship?
I would definitely name the Amy Nelson shuttle Algorithm.
Ah, done. Nice.
And right next to your shuttle would be mine that says has no rhythm. Done. Absolutely. That's it. Buddy ships.
Bada boom. Oh, that's funny. Well, I think overall the fans, like you said, were pretty much positive. I think the questions that they brought up were, I think, valid. And I do hope that we get to see a little bit more and how this ties in. I hope that the writers have this long game with these short treks, because I think it's great. I think the Calypso pulled on different parts of Star Trek philosophy that was very unexpected, and I just loved it. I was telling you before we started recording, like, I don't know why this short trek just sucked me in completely, and I wasn't that sucked into Runaway with Tilly, where it was a character that we knew and had a good story. But this one I've watched and each time just completely loved it. And just like so many of the comments were like, I was watching it with a smile on my face. It was very endearing and very unique for a Star Trek story. So
I totally agree. Again, I believe for me personally, it was because of the climate of the states that we were in, the terror, the horror that we've had. And to watch a story such like this, to bring smiles to faces, it brought a smile to my face. And I'll say it again for the last time, use the sleeve, not a Kleenex. It was really pulling at the heartstrings. And I think it was something to bring us to our center for humanity and for romance, for us to find that somebody to keep us, not so much to jail us till we don't leave, but for us to find somebody and picture what they would look like and picture a dance floor and do a dance, even if it's just for 30 seconds. And we have to look into that picture and then have it fade away. That's what got me, was you look into a face, it realizes what it's got, but when it sees into you, it realizes what you need. And it comes back to the cliche of, if you love them, let them go. And that's what it is. I do have one note I want to share, because I don't think anybody touched on it. So the planet of Alcor 4, I did a little research because I was trying to see if there was callbacks, like Runaway had a callback to the food fight with the replicator shooting everything. And I tried to figure out what planet Alcor 4 was from in all the series. Believe it or not, there is not a planet called Alcor 4. But if you look it up on Google and put Alcor Star Trek, there is an old DOS program. For those young listeners, this was way before Windows and way before Apple. It was a thing called IBM, and it was a program called BASIC. 10 print, my name is Chris. 20 run. So it was a DOS program where Alcor was Star Trek trivia. It was all for Star Trek trivia, and it was a game that you play on the DOS program itself.
Wow.
So it gave you, yeah.
Well, that's cool.
I looked it up, so. A little bit of a tidbit. I do my research.
There you go. Excellent. Well, listeners, be sure to check out our Discovery and Short Treks coverage. We have Live from the Edge, airs on Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern, so you can watch Bruce and Brandy and ask questions live. That will be released as a podcast on Saturday mornings. Our commentary will be available as Tracks from the Edge with our wonderful Mike and Max. And of course, you can catch a full analysis on the Edge main show with Patrick and myself. To wrap up the coverage, join us for Notes from the Edge for links between Discovery and the broader franchise with our one and only Christopher Jones. You'll find all of these in the main feed for the Edge and in the Trek.fm master feed. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Discovery, and the best place to do that is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, where I will collect your feedback for Postcards from the Edge. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or send us email using the contact form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the Edge. So Chris, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Well, you can find me on the street corners of Las Vegas with a sign that says, "We'll Trek for Food." Outside of that, you can find me at the Babel Conference, where I drop in from time to time, drop little comments, nuggets here and there. You can find me on Twitter, where my handle is at TrekFanLV. That's where I talk Star Trek. I do some fun dub smashes, some lip syncs along the way, because sometimes we need a laugh. So anything to make the people laugh, that's what I do.
You can find me here on the network. I co-host, as I said, with Patrick on the main show for The Edge. I also co-host on Earl Grey with Richard Marquez and Justin Ozer. And you can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And I am tweeting Star Trek and my Utah football, because I love college football. And I am on my Deep Space Nine, currently in season 5 for my rewatch. So it's been really fun for that. But my favorite place is on the Babel Conference. We would like to thank our associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Puleo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Modreau, Cornelia Reutner, and Ryan Mallett. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows going and even become an associate producer, visit patreon.com/trekfm for all the details. Well, thank you, Chris, for coming on Postcards. It was so much fun talking Star Trek Discovery with you today.
Thank you very much, Amy, for having me. And if I get down on my knees and beg Can I come back to postcards, please? Maybe a spot on the edge, please?
Well, we'll see about how many math references you throw in next time. That's my job.
I promise no math references. I will promise that for sure.
All right. So join us next time for another episode of Postcards from the Edge. Hailing frequencies open.
See you later, folks.